All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
And we're officially in the NBA offseason. And along with the offseason comes the NBA draft, which just happened a couple nights ago. And a lot of surprising picks, some big names here. This is a pretty notable draft, I would say, in terms of the talent here. So let's just break it down, Hunter. Let's jump right into it. Let's start, I guess, with the top five, because I feel like that's what people pay the most attention to. And so, obviously, no surprises with the first overall pick. The San Antonio Spurs selected Victor Wembanyama. The second overall pick is where things started to get a little bit questionable, and we'll talk about this in much more depth just coming up. The Hornets selected Brandon Miller. Then the Blazers, with the third overall pick, selected Scoot Henderson. And then, crazy story. Amen and Asar Thompson, twin brothers who played in the Overtime Elite League, got drafted back to back, with Amen going number four to Houston and then Asar going to Detroit with number five. So, I mean, Hunter, first of all, what do you think about this top five right here? Who are the names that jump out to you? And I mean, yeah, like, just give me your overall thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the right top five. I like all these guys. I know that you're a little down on that Hornets pick on Brandon Miller, which I
Very much
also
so.
agree is the wrong pick, but I don't think I'm nearly as down on it as you are. Very clear Victor Wembanyama is the first pick. No questions there. I thought Asar could have fallen the draft a little more. I think Amen was definitely a clear top four pick. But it's kind of nice to see him drafted back to back with his brother.
Yeah.
Just rounding up this draft, I thought, I mean, Scoot, if Dame decides to stay, Scoot and Dame would be a very interesting backcourt together.
For sure.
But I guess what I think is more interesting, the more juice to talk about, is this Brandon Miller situation with the Hornets. And I think the reason you're so down on it, the reason I also don't think this is the right pick, be was because the Hornets went for sort of fit over talent. Because obviously Scoot Henderson, who was the consensus second best player in this draft, wouldn't really fit alongside LaMelo Ball. Both very ball
Yeah.
dominant. And you probably have to choose one over the other in that situation. But they went with Brandon Miller instead, who fits better alongside LaMelo Ball. But when you're not a
Yeah.
winning organization anyways, and when you're not trying to win like right now, what does it matter if you have guys who don't necessarily fit together?
Exactly. And I think that, like, look, the disparity between Brandon Miller and Scoot Henderson, in my opinion, is much greater. I think that Scoot has real star potential, all NBA potential in this league. I mean, next level athleticism, amazing body control, tremendous finishing. He can really just jump out the gym. He's also a very good playmaker as well. He is very much fits that archetype of, like, the hyper athletic point guard, in the same vein as a Russell Westbrook, a Derrick
I
Rose,
think
a John
De'Aaron
Morant.
Fox is a really good comparison to who he compares to today.
Sure, I think De'Aaron is also a great comparison. I would say he's a little bit more athletic than that. I mean, you see this
No,
guy
I don't think
play.
so. I think De'Aaron Fox is one of the most athletic and fa quickest guys in the league. I
Okay,
think he
sure. In
gets
terms
up
of
there with the best of
quickness,
them, but I think he has the shot more like De'Aaron Fox than like a Russell Westbrook. That's why I think De'Aaron is a better comparison. I think the
sure.
shot.
I just think that, I mean, Scoot's not a great 3-point shooter. I mean, he definitely has the mechanics to get there, but I'm saying as of right now, I think his ceiling is more so along the lines of, like, a John Morant or like a De'Aaron Fox, like, as you're saying, where they sort of
Yeah,
came
yeah.
and developed their shot.
Absolutely.
But just
Yeah.
talking about Brandon Miller really quick, this is a guy who I think is a very overrated player. I mean, look, what did we see with from him in college? Not, like, excluding all the off the court issues, which, I mean, like, you're just adding more tinder to, like, an already bright flame in Charlotte with all the problems they've had with, Bridges, Miles Bridges, and just, like, every player on there has some sort of off the court issues. Brandon Miller, his issues aside, right? Like, this is a guy that scored 0 points in a college basketball game, and he played the whole game. Like, this is a guy who, in my opinion, is not a great shot creator. He's a good shooter, but can't really create for himself like that. And he's not a great finisher either. He shot pretty low percentages around the rim. And so, just everything aside, like, I just see him as almost like a glorified 3-and-D kind of guy. Like some people make the comparison for him with like the great two-way players in this league, like a Paul George or players along those same lines. But I just don't see it. I see his ceiling more so as like a role player than anything.
I don't know. I think he's definitely like pretty on the court low tempered, but like off the court very high tempered. Not like high tempered meaning like mean he just says outlandish things, which I think also has to have some implications, such as saying that Paul George is the GOAT and that the Hornets will be winning the NBA title next year. That's
Whoa, he
probably
didn't go
honestly
that far.
worse
He
than
said that Hornets will be in the finals, so he's a
okay,
little
they'll
bit more
be in the final.
realistic.
You're right, you're right. Slightly more realistic. Ah, yes, Hornets in the finals. I think that might be a little bit more outlandish than saying Paul George was the GOAT.
Honestly, they're both equally as ludicrous, but I agree. His temperament off the court is not encouraging if you're a Hornets fans. And Hornets fans, I think, are in consensus and disagreeing with this pick. You know, like you saw those reactions in like the Charlotte sports bars in the Charlotte Hornets arena when the Hornets made that selection. Everybody let out a collective groan. You know, Scoot was the guy there, as you said, consensus number two. And who cares about the fit? Like you can always make the fit work. You just can't make a player just inherently more talented than someone else.
And the thing is, if the fit doesn't work, there's definitely a market out there for LaMelo if he's the guy you want to trade. And there's definitely a market out there for Scoot if he's the guy you want to trade.
Exactly. And like look, I think that the Hornets historically have kind of whiffed on their number two overall picks, especially under Michael Jordan. I mean, just look at some of the past guys they've drafted number two. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, like, come on. How did that pick work out? I'm not saying that Brandon Miller is going to be that poor of a player. I just think that, look, I think maybe the Hornets overthought this pick and they sort of like thought more about the fit and how these guys are going to develop together when sometimes the most obvious answer is right in front of you. So I think that they whiffed on this, but I mean, let's talk about the kind of elephant in the room, the 7-foot-3 elephant in the room, and that's Victor Wembanyama. I don't think we've talked about him too much on this podcast, but you know, this is one of the most hyped prospects in basketball, in sports history, and people are, you know, claiming that he has, you know, GOAT potential. Like he could end his career top 10. I mean, just due to his intangibles, 7-foot-3 guy who can handle the ball, shoot the rock, incredible shot blocker. But I don't know, Hunter, how do you feel about him as a prospect? How do you think he's going to fare in this league? And I mean, just like very preliminary thoughts, like where do you think he's going to end up?
Yeah, I mean, I really do like him as a prospect. He's very unique. My only concern is I think he could come into this league similarly to a Kristaps Porzingis and have an immediate positive impact, be the unicorn. And I obviously he's a better ball handler and a better creator than Kristaps is. But the concern there is Kristaps had a potentially career-ending early injury very early into his career. I believe it was it. I don't remember if it was an ACL or Achilles, but he tore one of them. And obviously, he's still a great player, but he's not the same player since then. And no matter how much mobility training and flexibility training that Wembanyama does, which he is, you know, constantly doing, it's very apparent he cares, he works hard, and he's humble. You know, you can't train yourself for a 300-pound, 320-pound, 7'2" center like Joel Embiid to come straight into your chest while trying to block his shot. Or you can't prepare for LeBron James coming down at you full speed on a fast break. Like those just are grown men kind of NBA only scenarios that you cannot prepare for anywhere else in the world. And I don't think that he is going to have a hard time developing his body, especially with the team like the Spurs, who know how to develop guys, especially big men. The Spurs are great at that, so I think they'll be able to help him there. So I think he'll be a great prospect. My only concern would be the injury side of things, but outside of that, I mean, I think he could change the way the game is played in some ways. I wouldn't say I'm necessarily as high on him in the sense like I think it's like top 10 or bust. Like that's just outlandish. But I do think years down the line, he could become, you know, a Rudy Gobert on defense with the like a cat bag on offense.
I think that if that's his ceiling, okay, let's just take the hypothetical player because just I'm curious. A guy who has Rudy Gobert's defense and Karl Anthony Towns' offensive prowess, like where does that place him in the league? Like if that player existed right now in the current NBA.
I think that places him in the top five. I think you gotta
Valid,
be looking
yeah.
at the guy who's in the top five. Yeah. I mean, I think you still have like your Jokic or Giannis, maybe your Embiid. Like, I think that's who you're competing with. Right there.
Sure.
You're right up
Yeah.
there. So
I want to say this about Wembanyama because, look, I think that he's hyped so much, like that. I think no matter how he plays, he's going to be a disappointment. I don't see his rookie
yeah.
season being anything more than that because people are saying, like, oh, is he going to be an all-star his first year? No, he's not. I'm like so confident in the fact that Rudy or Victor Wembanyama will not be an all-star his first year. You know, the NBA is a very different league. It takes players a lot to adjust to the physicality, the length of the season, especially for a guy who is pretty thin, right? He doesn't have a lot of muscle on his body, pretty small frame, and a guy who's what, 7'3"? You know, I think he's going to be dealing with a couple injuries here and there. He's going to miss some time in his rookie year. Look, the thing is, as you get taller, especially past 7 foot, your just propensity to be injured goes up exponentially. That's why, you know, it's very rare for a guy that height to have an incredibly long and tenured career in this league. Even the historical greats that have been this tall, like Yao Ming, their careers have been ended early with injury. You brought up Kristaps Porzingis. That's another great example. Like, he's still playing in this league, but he's not a star player. And he has like never really looked the same after he tore his ACL in 2018. And so I'll say, like, I think that Victor Wembanyama is going to be a good player in this league, but I think that we have to temper our expectations a lot. There's also some red flags about him. Like, he's not a great shooter. He shot like 30% from the 3-point line. And
I
do
was
I think
going to
those
talk about
percentages are
that.
going to
If
go
you,
up? Yeah, sorry, you can go ahead.
no, I was going to talk about just I think efficiency could be a concern early in the career, and also if you look at a lot of the Wembanyama highlights, you're seeing a lot of times he's shooting at three, and then you see his shot's just a brick, so he runs down and collapses to the paint, where he just gets like an open putback in the lane, and like that's
Yeah.
how he gets it generates a good bit of his points. Which obviously doesn't translate at all to the NBA because there's going to be more bodies in the paint. There's going to be more guys jumping for the ball, more guys boxing out. And a guy who's 250 pounds and 7'3" isn't going to be able to jump over, again, a Joel Embiid or even like a guy like, give me a PJ Tucker. Like, you don't have to be that tall. If you got a good low center of gravity and you have size and experience, you know how to move your body. Victor Wembanyama isn't going to be able to get around that guy early in his career.
I don't know if I'll go that far to the point where I think like PJ Tucker is going to be getting stops on Wembanyama just because I think
No,
that, you know, his
not
physical
like direct
presence.
stops. I'm saying like if Wembanyama shoots a three and then wants to run into the lane and get a putback dunk, I think that's going to be 10 times harder for him to do
Sure. Okay,
in the
that's a fair
NBA.
point. Yeah, especially just because
I'm
of the
not
level
saying
of
like P I'm
physicality.
not saying like yeah, PJ Tucker is going to be stopping Wembanyama on every possession. That's not what I'm
Sure.
trying to say.
Yeah. No,
But
that's valid. I want to
when
say,
he has the green light
yeah.
in San Antonio, I think he has a lot of opportunity. I think his stat line might be like something like a it's called 17, 17, 8 in like a block and a half a game, which I think is great for a rookie.
Yeah, I mean, not all-star numbers, but I agree. He's going to have a good rookie season. I think the green flags for Wembanyama's career is the fact that he is getting drafted to San Antonio. This is an organization that I trust to develop talent, especially big men. He has all the best mentors and sort of guiding figures, you know, Tim Duncan, David Robinson. I just saw a photo of him grabbing dinner, like he's talking about like, oh, like I have the best mentors, and he's grabbing dinner with the Tim Duncan, David Robinson. I think Tony Parker was there.
Manu
Like,
Ginobili was there.
yeah. So all
Yep.
these guys who really serve as like mentor figures and can teach him, you know, what it takes to succeed in the NBA. And then San Antonio, who is historically great at developing these kinds of guys, is a very good sign. And then obviously you have Greg Popovich as the head coach, who I think he will know how to utilize him within their system. But I'm very skeptical. I'm very skeptical. I really don't see him having like the GOAT level career. And this is might be an incredibly hot take, and this could age extremely poorly. But I see a world where Scoot Henderson has a better career than Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing is, I think when you're taking Wembanyama, you're banking a lot more on it's not necessarily a project pick, but in some ways it is because he's not league ready for most aspects of the game. He is a frame. He's kind of just, like the idea of KD, but just adding other features to him. Like, when KD came into the league when he was, it was what's 2000. That was 2005. No, it was 2008 maybe.
2009, I
Regardless.
think.
So
2008, 2009, whatever.
2008, 2009, regardless. I mean, like, people are like, wow, this guy's 6 foot, 7 foot tall, and he's shooting jumpers like that. Like, that's pretty crazy. Well, we could be saying the same thing about Victor Wembanyama down the line, but it's a lot different, like you were saying, when you're in the 7 foot plus range, and this when you're that skinny, the injuries are exponential. So I think watching out for that is the biggest concern. But I think outside the injury, if he can avoid that, he'll have a lengthy and very interesting career. But you're talking about Scoot, so let's move on to talking about Scoot and kind of the Blazers scenario, because that's kind of an interesting one. Because I feel like coming in, especially if let's assume Damian Lillard's there, we can't assume anything else as for right now. That's
Well,
a
we should talk
very,
about that. Like, do we think that Damian Lillard is going to stay on this team? Because his camp has made it abundantly clear, like, we want the Blazers to trade the third pick to bring in a star level player that, can help us win right now. And so obviously his camp has to be displeased with the fact that the Blazers went ahead and made the selection. And the Blazers are in pretty good shape for a rebuild. They have Anfernee Simons, Scoot Henderson now, and Shaedon Sharpe. That already is a very solid big three with a lot of athleticism, a lot of shooting there that you can build around. I mean, what do you think? Do you think this is the sort of last domino to fall that Damian Lillard finally requests that trade, or how do you see this playing out?
Look, can we say this every single year? Like last year it was, oh, CJ McCollum's gone. It's finally time to get Dame out of there. Like I think every year for the past 3 years, this has been the narrative. And I'm not going to say this, it's Dame's time to leave until Dame actually leaves. Because, I feel like this happens every single year. I feel like it's the same thing as, I don't know, just when there's a free, or like, I feel like it's the same thing as James Harden right now. Like, oh, is James Harden going to go back to Houston? I don't know. I honestly, it's like, I'm not going to say anything about those sorts of kind of crazy ideas until they actually happen. But I think Damian Lillard, especially, I mean, this has happened every single year. But if you look at the team that is there, I don't see anything for him. I just don't. Yusuf Nurkic is all that's left. Jeremy Grant's a free agent. It's kind of a mess, especially because now you have a guard rotation. If Dame stays, of Scoot, Shaedon Sharpe, Anfernee Simons, and Dame, and that's a lot of guard talent, a lot of the guard depth that you're not going to be able to utilize, especially in your young guys. If you do keep Dame, you're not going to be able to properly develop. Probably Shaedon Sharpe is the odd man out there, and you probably don't want to do that to the guy who you picked number 7 overall last year.
Exactly. And here's the thing. I'll say that I think the happiest resolution to this situation is that the Blazers decide to trade Damian Lillard, because then Dame doesn't have to go through the awkwardness of, reneging on his word about wanting to play and retire in Portland. He can like be happily go and play for a contender, and the Blazers can fully buy into this rebuild. Give their young guys the room to develop and grow, and also get some young assets and picks in return. Like, you can get a crazy haul for Damian Lillard. You can literally get, one of the best young players in the league. If you like, I mean, a guy that came to mind, I don't know why, is like a guy like Mikal Bridges. I know that like it wouldn't really make sense for him to go to Brooklyn, but if say like a three-team deal was made where Mikal Bridges landed in Portland, like that's a guy who could fit perfectly alongside Scoot Henderson and Anfernee Simons. Like, imagine him as your three guard or as your three wing. And so, look, I think that Portland needs to realize they're not winning in the next 2 to 3 years, I want to say. You got to give this time, this group a lot of room to develop and to grow. So I think moving on from the Damian Lillard era and buying into the Scoot Henderson, Anthony Simons era is the right direction to go, and give Damian Lillard the chance to really contend and play for a championship. He deserves it, and I think that's the best thing you can do for your guy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think kind of most people are on this in the same boat. I think the only people who aren't on that boat are the Portland Trailblazers organization themselves. So, it's tough. But I think we can t move on to talking about the next
Okay,
two
wait, wait.
picks.
Last thing, last
Okay,
thing, last
go
thing.
ahead.
Do you think that, like, just make a prediction right now? Do you think Damian Lillard is going to play in a Portland Trailblazers jersey come the start of the next season?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to take the bold prediction. I'm going to say no. I think he's going to play for one of the Eastern Conference juggernauts. I think he's going to play for a Miami, a Boston team like that.
Miami would be
Really,
fun. I hope Miami, if it were a team. Yeah, but moving on, let's talk about Amen and Ausar. It's hard to talk about the parts since they're twins. But let's start with Amen. I think he's a really interesting prospect. He's kind of a facilitator. Slasher, very efficient guy, averaged 16 4 and or sorry 16 6 and 6, 2 steals a game, great defender, great cutter, good finisher, very high IQ. Both these guys, I would say these are the two highest IQ players in the draft, and they're big students of the game. You listen to them talk about the game and they know their NBA history. They know that the guys you've never heard of going from the 1950s to today. These guys love the game. They live, breathe, eat the game. And it's kind of just a joy to see because you see a lot of guys come in and they just like, they probably couldn't tell you who was the MVP 5 years ago. And you get these guys, and it's like a real nice refresher. So go ahead and start with Amen. What do you think of him? And what do you think of him as a fit on this Rockets team? Because I think this is a very big win.
I think it's a perfect fit, honestly. I think that, the Rockets were really looking for a facilitator, a point guard that could help orchestrate their offense. And I think that Amen Thompson really is the guy that can fit that mold. I think that, he's an extremely high IQ player, probably the best playmaker in this draft, I want to say. Also extremely athletic, like tremendous finisher, can really attack the cup. I think that his playmaking and his athleticism are really like the key defining, and just his IQ in general are the really the key defining aspects to his game. And I think that's going to complement these other pieces on the Rockets, like Jabari Smith, Jalen Green, even Alperen Şengün. I'm excited to see their pick and roll game together. I think that he has some struggles with his 3-point shooting. I think that he struggled a bit from the 3-point line and even from the free throw line. And that's going to be a bit of area of growth for him, but I see him and his work ethic as allowing him to grow into that role and to become a better shooter. I could for sure see that happening. So I think the Rockets really knocked it out of the park with this pick. This was a phenomenal selection, both fit and talent wise. He was both like the best fit and the best talent, and you love when those two worlds
Yeah.
kind of are meshed together. And yeah, I'm just excited to see how he plays alongside this young core coached by Ime Udoka. I think the Rockets really have a bright future. And I think they really knocked it out of the park with this draft. So I'm curious also. Okay, so they also drafted, just while we're on the subject, they also drafted Cam Whitmore. And Cam Whitmore was
Yeah.
almost like a consensus lottery pick. Like, he's a very talented offensive scorer.
Consensus top like 8 pick.
He was really hooping last year. I think at Villanova, right?
That sounds right. Yeah.
So, I mean, Hunter, why did he slide so far to 20? And I mean, like, do you think that it was right for the Rockets to pick this guy up?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was just a lot of risk associated with taking on Cam Whitmore. He's a guy who's been kind of plagued by injury throughout his collegiate career. But he was really a certified bucket, just absolute flamethrower, the kind of guy who, like, before he was injured, was looking like he could be the next, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like a good comparison, but it's kind of hard. for him because he's just, like I was going to say Jamal Crawford, but he's like more of a star kind of quality to him, like a Jamal Crawford, but he just an absolute bucket. Do you have any better comparison in your mind? I don't know why that was the first guy that came in my head, but I think he fell mainly because of that injury concern. And oh, if you were going to say something, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I think that it's hard to say. I mean, he's a phenomenal scorer. I want to say even like a Norman Powell type player. I mean, he's a little bit bigger than Norman Powell. He's like 6'7". So like just a phenomenal scoring wing player is it's a bit hard to give a comp off the top of the head, but
Yeah,
yeah,
but I
like
think it was a good pick for the Rockets, especially because look, they're a young team. It's not a risk. If and he they picked him at 20. So this is a guy where it's like, okay, well, if he pans out, that's a steal for us. And if he doesn't pan out, well, he was the 20th pick. It's not such a big deal. And we have our guy in Amen Thompson, who we trust and we know is going to be a good pick. So that's
yeah.
kind of the best of both worlds for them. And on top of that, they have such a great young core already. I'm not sure how Ime Udoka is as a young player coach, but we obviously know that he can bring wins to a team. And this he is probably going to be coming off the bench and he could be a great scoring punch for them along with oh my God,
Kevin Porter
who's
Jr., I mean.
sorry, that's exactly what I was thinking, Kevin Porter Jr. So I think that's just a great pickup for them. And then I think when we talk later, we're both going to have the Rockets as probably the biggest winner of this draft because I think it was just a beautiful, beautiful draft for them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, do you have any additional thoughts on Ausar Thompson going number 5 to Detroit, or
Yeah,
do you want to just get into
absolutely.
our winners losers? Okay.
I could talk a little bit about Ausar real quick.
Sure.
Yeah, Ausar, first of all, I think Pistons is also a great fit for Ausar on the Pistons. I think he might have not been the best player available, but he was definitely the right fit. But I don't mind that on this Pistons team because they already have so much top-end lottery talent right now. He's a little bit, I wouldn't say a little bit, he's a lot better of a defender than his brothers. I think he's more like a energy guy getting in the passing lanes and just disturbing the enemy team, starting fast breaks. He's just a very tenacious player, and he's also very hyper athletic, good finisher, also has the same kind of shooting struggles as his brother. But I think just that raw defensive talent and that athleticism is just an absolute win for the Pistons because they already have Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey. That's going to be a very, very athletic team, and they already have a lot of passing. So
Yeah, definitely. And I think,
excited to see
like
them.
both him and his brother are going to jump out the gym, and I'm just excited to see them. They're both freak athletes of the game, and so it's a great story, and I think they're actually going to be successful in this league. So, looking forward to see the Thompson twins on the NBA floor. I guess we could jump into our winners and losers of this draft. So,
Yeah.
as you mentioned, we both have the Rockets as winners, making the selection of Amen Thompson and, getting Cam Whitmore all the way at 20. To basically lottery talent picks. Just a phenomenal job. And I guess the next one we could talk about, the next winner, is the Utah Jazz. I mean, you want to talk about them?
Yeah. Honestly, I didn't have the Jazz as a winner in my book, so if you want to go
Okay,
ahead and
I had
talk
the
about that
Jazz
for
as the winners.
yourself, then go
Sure,
ahead.
sure, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think they drafted a guy in Taylor Hendricks from the University of Florida. Or Central Florida, sorry, that I really like. I think that, he's probably the best pure 3-and-D kind of guy in this league. And so, I think the Jazz had what, 3 first round picks. So they could play it safe a little bit and also take some swings. And I think that Taylor Hendricks was a very safe pick. He is a guy
Keontae
that
George was
reminds
the
me.
swing.
Yeah. Taylor Hendricks, one thing though. He's a 3-and-D guy, but he's a 3-and-D guy in the same sense for me as Mikal Bridges. Like, he's drafted for that reason, but he has shown a lot of promise as a shot creator, as a guy who can create his own offense. So he's a guy who's going to be solid at the worst and can develop into like a very good player in the best case scenario. And then, yeah, as you said, Keontae George from Baylor, I like his game a lot. I think he's going to fit. He can kind of play both the point guard and the shooting guard. He's a bit streaky as a shooter, but I think that he can really develop into a solid shooter because He shot, I think, like 80 something percent at the free throw line. So, I mean, my opinion, the best indicator of whether a college NBA player or a college player's shooting is going to translate to the NBA game is the free throw shooting, because, three point line is a little different, and, just the free throw line really dictates your mechanics, regardless of what level of basketball you're at. If you have good mechanics, you're going to be a good free throw shooter, and that's what's really going to translate to being a good 3-point shooter. So I like his promise, and I thought overall, they just added some very solid talent to an already talented young team. So I had the Jazz as a winner there. But Hunter, I think you had the Mavericks as a winner as well.
The Mavericks are probably tied with like my 1A, 1B winner. Sorry. My brother is just talking to me for a second, but Mavs I also have as a big winner. I think it was a really good deal for them to be able to get off that Davis Bertans contract. We didn't haven't
Sure.
talked about that yet. But they traded down in the draft to get off that Davis Bertans contract, but they got a player who was arguably a top eight pick as well in Derek Lively. This is a guy, 7'1", very young. I think one of the youngest in the draft. Just an absolute shot blocker, great center from Duke, good rim runner, athletic, kind of just your prototypical NBA center. And that's a guy that this Dallas Mavericks team was really, really needing. And they're probably going to have to play him some big minutes. I'm sure they'll get a starting center, but if they can't get a starting center, this is the guy you start, you know? And you're banking a lot on the fact that he's going to come in and have an immediate impact. I mean, he didn't have great stats in at Duke, but he played in a great system. And he shot, 66% from the field, had two and a half blocks a game in 20 minutes, which is ridiculous. And hopefully you just hope that Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving can get him great shots, easy lobs, make him a better player. Kind of, I feel like DeAndre Jordan-esque in Lob City, like Clippers. I feel like that's the ideal role you'd have for him.
I'm thinking like even a Nick Claxton is a good comparison for him. Not really a guy who's looking to score first, a guy who's more your defensive anchor, terrific shot blocker, as you said. But yeah, I think he fits the Mavs really well. That's exactly what they needed. And then yes, getting rid of that Davis Bertans contract is a blessing. Also, a low-key underrated move that they did was getting they traded, I think, with they had a trade with the Sacramento Kings to pick up Rashawn Holmes. And I think that, that was a bad contract for Sacramento just because they have enough front court depth. But, the Mavs need all the help they can get at the center position. And I think Rashawn Holmes can actually be like a rotational player for them in the regular season. So I thought those were solid moves, good draft picks, and yeah, they did very well this draft.
Absolutely. And then obviously the other teams who we thought did well in this draft were very clearly the Spurs just drafting Victor Wembanyama. We've talked about that enough. And the Blazers having drafted Scoot Henderson. I think you kind of just have to have them as winners considering the fact
Yes.
that they drafted the two, top talents in this draft.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, they did. Those were the obvious picks, and they would be the biggest losers if they didn't draft them.
Yeah, absolutely. And then who do you have as your biggest losers? I think we've already discussed one of them, but go ahead.
I mean, yeah, we talked about the Hornets as losers for just not drafting Scoot. But I also want to talk about the Magic, who I think they also had they had two lottery picks, and I think
Six
they
and 11.
missed on I think they missed on both, to be honest. I think that they drafted Anthony Black number 6, and that was a bit of a reach at 6. He's a guy who, I don't know, he's a good defender and a good passer, but he's not much of a shooter, not much of a guy who can really get you buckets or anything like that. He gives me like when I watched him play, he seems more like a backup point guard. Like a good backup point guard. I think that's his ceiling. I don't see him having star potential. And for this Orlando team that already has good guards in Jalen Suggs and Cole Anthony, I'm not sure why this is the guy that you go for. It just feels like now there's too many cooks in the kitchen at the guard position. So I was not really a fan of that. I think there was more talent that they could have gone with. And then at 11, this was a complete reach, in my opinion. getting Jet Howard from Michigan, obviously Juwan Howard's son, complete reach.
Seems
I
like a
think
guy I
that.
thought was going to go. I thought he was going to be in the mid to early 20s, and they got him at
Yeah.
11, which is pretty surprising because
It's
this was a
an
guy the
insane
Lakers were
reach.
possibly looking at.
Yeah,
The
he's a
Lakers had
good
the 20th
shooter.
pick, so.
He's a good shooter, but that's about it. He's not a defender. He's not a playmaker. Doesn't really have a great finishing game. He's a bit of a one-dimensional kind of guy. And so for you to go at 11 and pick him up is a reach. And I think that, look, if I was the Magic, you make one of these picks. You take a gamble on Anthony Black, but then you draft like a solid guy that can be just a very solid player. Like I would have taken Grady Dick with that 11th pick if you want the shooting, because that's what you're gonna get. But to take two gambles like this, I didn't like it at all. And I think that, they whiffed on this draft, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree. I think Anthony Black, like you're saying, likely like rotational guard. He doesn't have any necessary star qualities, which when you're trying to draft at six, especially in such a deep draft class, because this is probably the deepest draft class of, at the very least the 2020s, maybe the past 10 years or so. But when you have such a deep draft class, why are you trying to draft a guy who doesn't really have any standout qualities? And then you do draft another guy with standout qualities, but he literally has no other qualities. So I feel like those are just two misses there, especially when you have a lot of guys on the board, like you'd said, Grady Dick, another guy, Kobe Bufkin, was a really
Yeah.
interesting prospect, Keontae George. I mean, there's just a lot of guys in this draft. This is such a deep draft. And I mean, you talked about Jamie Jaquez Jr., another guy out of UCLA. I think another guy we really haven't talked about at all, that was a big hit was the Warriors with Bryn Podziemski. They got
I
this
actually
guy.
don't know too much about him.
Okay, actually, funny enough, my brother got to see him play live at his high school,
Really?
because this team happened to play at my brother's high school during a practice of theirs. So funny enough, my brother's name is also Brandon, so he happened to be paying attention to who this guy was and just found, researched him and found out a lot about him before he was even drafted to the Warriors, and he happens to be a Warriors fan, so it kind of just all worked out beautifully. But this is a guy who averaged 44% from the three on 20 at 20 points a game. I mean, they just ridiculous efficient shooting efficiency, great off the catch and shoot, great off creating his own dribble. This is very much a Jordan Poole replacement in my opinion. Like very, very Warriors-esque, very much is going to fit into the rotation. And then this is a guy who was averaging a triple double in high school. We're talking about an absolute baller, and obviously it's just high school. But I was surprised he went this late because this is a guy, when you look at the numbers, when you look at his shot, it's just so pure. And but I am glad the Warriors got this guy because he's going to fit right in with what they do.
Yeah, I think that, he's going to be a good fit in the Warriors system, like as a shooter. I guess the concern with him is just he is a little undersized at 6'5". Do you play him at the shooting guard? Do you play him at the small forward? He's a bit of a combo kind of player. But yeah, I think that his shooting looks legit, just from the numbers. I mean, 44% from three is no joke. And the WCC is like a legit conference too. It's not like, the Big Sky or like one of these kind of joke conferences, in my opinion. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a decent pick. I wouldn't go as far as to say he's a Jordan Poole replacement, but I think he can be a contributor given 20 minutes, 15 minutes a night. So I'm not mad at that. But yeah, I think that the last guy maybe we could talk about, just because drafted to our team, Jalen Hushafino from Indiana, coming to the Lakers. Who had the 17 overall pick. What do you think of him, Hunter? Do you think this was a good pick by the Lakers?
I think outside of maybe Amen Thompson, this is probably the best playmaker in the draft. Very, very smart player. This is a guy who isn't the most efficient, but he's also kind of in that range of he's good shot mechanics, gonna work with a guy like Phil Handy, could really help out his shooting streak, maybe become a little bit better of a shooter. Only 78% from the free throw line, but again, those aren't like horrible numbers by any means. This is a guy who, 6'6", 215. He has a pretty good solid frame, and he's still very young. I believe he's still only 18 years old, or yeah, actually no, sorry, he just turned 19. But I think this is the kind of draft where the Lakers kind of went for the maybe 3-and-D kind of prototype body, and they're going to try and mold those players into what they want them to be, as long as they have the right mindset. This is a guy that Rob Pelinka had talked about, just the workout was amazing. And the Lakers are a team that really do go for workouts, and I do trust their ability to draft because the Lakers are usually very good at hitting on their draft picks. It's the development that concerns me a little more, but they usually pick pretty well. And this is a guy who, if they impressed Rob Pelinka, they impressed, Phil Handy. I think they can impress me, especially with the work ethic supposedly being Kobe-esque.
And I mean, this is a guy who has, great shot mechanics, shot the ball very well from the mid-range. He's a great defender too, can defend a lot of positions, has a great motor on that end of the floor. So I was happy with this pick. I know a lot of Laker fans were really upset, but you got to trust the Lakers scouting. They have some of the best scouts in the league. Just think of all the quality NBA players that have been drafted by the Lakers, not necessarily playing for the Lakers, but they were drafted by
No,
this same scouting.
none of them are playing for the Lakers, actually.
I mean, Austin Reeves, I guess,
He
would be the
wasn't
only
drafted.
guy. I mean, no, but they the scouts found him, is what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, so I think that yeah, Lakers did a good job with this first round pick, and I'm excited to see how Pochettino plays in the summer league. So looking forward to seeing him along with others.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I guess with that, that's enough NBA draft talk for now. We'll have a lot more to talk about during the summer league,
Yep,
where
I
Hunter's
got to.
actually going to be seeing them live.
Yep, I'm gonna see all of them live. I'm gonna see Wemby live. I'm gonna see Scoot live. I'll tell you how Brandon Miller looks. We'll see if he's all that, huh? Because he's playing his first game against Wembanyama. So,
Yeah, should be great. But I
yeah.
guess we can jump into talking about some NBA news that happened. Actually, quite a bit went down. So, let's first talk about Bradley Beal, who requested a trade from the Maverick or from the Wizards. And as the only player in the NBA, the only player in the NBA with a no trade clause, he was able to sort of pick and choose where he wanted to go. And he pretty much forced his way to Phoenix, where he'll be teaming up with KD, Devin Booker, and DeAndre Ayton. And so basically the details of this trade, the Suns get Bradley Beal, and then Jordan Goodwin and Isaiah Todd. And then the Wizards are picking up, they got CP3 in return, Landry Shamet, four first round pick swaps, and six second round picks. So what do you think of this deal, Hunter? Who won, who lost?
Yeah, I mean, originally when we had seen that saw this deal, it just looked like the Wizards were only getting Chris Paul and Landry Shamet, and maybe a second round pick. Like, the picks hadn't been announced yet, so that was kind of wild to me. Now looking and having seen that they have four first round pick swaps and six second round picks, I still think that's a little bit undervaluing what you should be able to get, especially considering you already traded Chris Paul. Really, all you're getting is a rotational player in Landry Shamet who gives you no actual value because that's the kind of guy you want on the championship quality team. And then you're not even getting actual first round picks, you're only getting first round pick swaps. So I definitely see this as kind of an L by the Wizards. But in other senses, they didn't really have a choice. They were given good offers, and Bradley Beal happened for some reason to be the only player with a no trade clause, so they had to work with what they had, and this was the best they could do. And getting 10 picks, that's not bad considering the fact that you're the player kind of determining what you could get and screwing your organization over. And then on the Suns side of this, I think it's honestly a lot more questionable for the Suns. It's like, this is just like a bad deal for both sides. And I think we're both in agreement. We talked about this in the last pod. We both don't like Bradley Beal on the Suns simply because we've seen the formula in the past 3, 4 years, and it's very clearly building chemistry, building homegrown talent, having a single or maybe two stars with a good key role players is the way to win an NBA championship, not this kind of super team, the Brooklyn Nets from the Phoenix Suns even last year. Like, these teams have just gotten dismantled either by injury, not knowing the scenarios that they're being put in, or just other teams knowing themselves better. So, I mean, I just see, I think we both can agree there, but let me get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think this is also a lose-lose situation. I don't like this deal for either sides. I think that the Wizards were able to recover this deal a little bit in the next deal we're going to talk about. But like you look at it just on paper, getting CP3 Landry Shamet pretty much for a guy like Bradley Beal is a complete fleece. Like that's an absolute steal. But for the Phoenix Suns, you know, the problem was never the problem was never the star power. You had that between KD and D Book. Like even just looking at those two guys, you have enough star power to take you deep in the playoffs. The problem was your defense and your depth. Does this trade help either of those? No, it doesn't. In fact, it just makes it worse because
And not
now
only
all
that.
your salary is tied up between four players, and you're going to have no bench and no real means to improve the defense.
I was going to say, not only that, but all three of their main star players are all guys who are fairly injury prone, and they're not planning to trade DeAndre Ayton, so they're not going to get more depth. So it's
Yeah.
just kind of crazy. But if you had to give a grade for the each team, what would the grades be?
I'll say this. Before I get to the grades, I just want to say, look, I know the Wizards were in a tough spot, but they had dug their own grave when they gave Bradley Beal that insane 200 plus mil extension. There was no reason that you should have done it. That's when you should have traded Bradley Beal, you know, after Russ left, after it was clear you're not doing anything with this core. You just got to move on from Bradley Beal, but instead they gave him the extension with the no trade clause. It was a bit ridiculous overall. And so, yeah, this the Wizards kind of dug their own grave. So, in terms of grades, I would give the Suns maybe like a B minus because I think that look like for the for what they had to give up to get a guy like Bradley Beal is like insane. So like. I get it to a certain extent, but I do think it's a net like negative move. So maybe I'll actually go for like a C plus, and then for the Wizards, I would give them like a D minus. Like this was
Really? I
the
think
fact
this is.
you couldn't even get a first round pick for Bradley Beal. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I mean, I see this honestly as a kind of a better deal for the Wizards and the Suns, and I see that from the perspective of the Wizards didn't have a choice really in their trades. It was kind of all predetermined for them by Bradley Beal. But I'm gonna go ahead and give this just, I honestly think this is like a C for the Suns and like maybe a C minus or like somewhere in that range for the Wizards. Like, it's a very close. I think it's just both very bad. But
I think
moving
that
on to.
you're giving the wait. I just think you're giving the Wizards way too much credit. I mean, just literally, just think about this, Hunter. Bradley Beal, the guy who led the league in scoring a couple years ago, you know, an all-star level shooting guard, right? A guy
Yeah,
that,
but you
you know,
also have to
was the
put into
face of your
perspective.
franchise. Look, you got 39-year-old Chris Paul, Landry Shamet, and no first-round picks. You literally got nothing in return for Bradley Beal.
Yeah, but this is also a guy who missed over half of this past season, is very injury prone in the past,
He's
and
not very injury prone.
yes,
Don't
he has.
he had
Every
he
single
had
no, he had 2 years in his career where he played more than 70 games. 2 years.
Okay,
Every
how many
single
did he
other
have
year,
above 60 games?
not many. Most of the early in his career, he was very injury prone when he was playing with John Wall. He after John Wall left, he had a stretch of 2 years where he was very good. That's when he got the big contract with Russell Westbrook, and then now he's injury prone again.
Hunter, what are you talking about? Like this is just blatant misinformation. Let's look. Hunt, like Bradley Beal, right? He played his second season 73 games, 63 games, 55 games, 77 games, 82 games, 82 games. Yes. And then the past four seasons, he's played 57, 60, 40, 50. But like historically, this
Yeah,
is not
that's
a guy
low.
who is that injury prone. Like,
No,
let's be honest here.
I'm not saying this is a guy who's crazy injury prone, but you have to when you look at the numbers, you're like, okay, this is a guy who in at least half of his regular seasons is missing 20 games.
That's
That's
not
a
too
lot.
atypical for a star. Like he's not an Iron Man, but it's not like we're talking about, I don't know, like
Anthony Davis. Yes,
Anthony Davis
I
here.
understand. Yeah. Okay, fair enough. But we can move on to the next trade. Let's talk
Okay.
about the Warriors and their situation because it kind of does tie to this Wizards deal. The Wizards were able to turn around Chris Paul, get him off their books in exchange for Jordan Poole, Patrick Baldwin Jr. They got a first round and a second round pick out of all of that. Somehow out of a 38 to 39-year-old Chris Paul, they pulled out a rising star in Jordan Poole, another young great player in Patrick Baldwin Jr., and on top of it, they got picks. I
Yeah.
don't ask me how they did it, but what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think this is a stupid move on the part of the Warriors. I don't understand why you look at a team that like has their guard position figured out with Steph and Klay, and you're like, yeah, let's add 39-year-old CP3 to this mix. I understand if you think Jordan Poole, you need to move on just with the way he performed the last postseason. But like, look, you gave this guy like a huge extension, and you claimed you were in it for the long run. Just because a player has a down year doesn't mean you immediately just trade them away. This just seems like a bit of a desperation move on the part of the Warriors. I don't like the fit at all. I also just don't really like Chris Paul next to Curry. I don't know how that's going to work. And look, the money is obviously a big challenge. Like, I don't know if they've just completely accepted they're not getting Draymond back, but it seems like it at this point. But from the Wizards' perspective, this is a very good move. Like
What do you
turning
mean?
Steve. What was that? Sorry, I just think that because what you have
Oh,
CP3 on
sorry.
making 30 mil.
No, this actually it makes it easier for you to re-sign Draymond by getting rid of that Jordan Poole contract.
Really? CP3 is making less money than Jordan Poole?
Makes it easier for you to get Draymond because it's only a single year deal. This makes it easier for you to be able to retain Draymond Green.
Oh, I see. Well, then I think
So
I messed up the money in my
what I was
head.
going to say is I understand this deal a little bit more than you do. I don't think it's a good deal for the Warriors. But where I see this is the Warriors are trying to get off of Jordan Poole's contract to be able to retain Draymond Green. And reportedly, Steph Curry was really pushing for Poole to be pushed out. So, we don't really know what was going on behind the scenes. We can't say that, Jordan Poole was going to be there in the long run. Kind of just as a spectator of the game, looking at how Jordan Poole was being talked to by the other stars on the Warriors in that Lakers series. This did not look like a guy they want to be playing next to. This looked like a guy they thought was irresponsible, like on the court and making bad decisions. I think that's kind of just in the heat of the moment. And obviously, like you had said, you don't want to like just throw it all away on the one down year. But I think Chris Paul can be a good leader for your second unit, for the young guys and Kuminga and Moody, and I think he does definitely provide some more ball handling and an interesting dynamic to this Warriors team. I don't think it's better than what Jordan Poole provided as a player, and I think you gave up a lot to get the money off the books. But I think you also have to realize this is probably a very desperate Wizards team to kind of scrape up any sort of talent they can. So I think you kind of gave them a little bit too much. With the fact that the Wizards literally had no direction and no hope. And I feel like the Warriors kind of gave them some kind of direction and hope.
When you talk about CP3 as sort of like a six man, leader of the second unit, this deal makes a little bit more sense in my eyes. I just like don't understand because the Warriors front office obviously gave Poole the massive extension, and this is a guy 2 years ago who was a massive contributor to you winning an NBA championship, and for you to just completely move on from him because of one down year, what does that show to the rest of your organization? What does that show to a guy like Moses Moody or Jonathan Kuminga that the organization's just willing to cast you aside the second you start playing poor? Like, it doesn't show a lot of faith in their young guys, which I think is troubling. But yeah, I mean, the deal makes a little bit more sense when you in the way that you framed it. And I think for the Wizards, this is that they definitely got the better end of the deal, getting rid of that CP3 contract and getting a young player in Jordan Poole who has all-star potential. And I think that, you give him a lot of free rein, and I think he can maybe do some incredible things. So if I were to give grades for this deal, I would give the Wizards maybe like a B plus. I think this is a solid move to get a guy like Jordan Poole and get CP3 off. Actually, I'll give them an A minus because they were able to get even like a first and a second out of this deal. And then for the Wiz or for the Warriors, I would maybe give them also like a B minus, C plus range. I'm still not too sold on this move though.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, I agree with the ratings. I'd give the Wizards like an A even. I think this is a very good deal for the Wizards because I think they get off of the guy they didn't want anyway and was going to give them nothing. Get a young player in pool that gives them some sort of direction and some sort of player to develop and make their team based off around. Like, don't be surprised if Jordan Poole averages 29 points a game. And then,
29 points a game?
no, dude, he's literally all they have. Like, don't be surprised if
Dude.
you see Jordan Poole literally taking freaking 26 shots a night on 29 points or something stupid, like just horrible efficiency. No,
Okay,
watch,
well,
watch. This is going to be a 15-win team with Jordan Poole going
15
crazy.
wins? I don't think that, dude, you don't understand. The last 15 win team was like probably what, the like Bobcats like 12, 13 years ago? Like, there's
This
no
team,
way. But
yeah, I know. But just regardless, I think I give them such a high ranking in this trade because somehow they were managed able to get picks and Patrick Baldwin Jr. out of this deal, which is a huge pickup. I don't think people know enough about this guy, PBJ, but he was a big asset to this Warriors team.
no, he
So,
was not. Let's stop gassing it up.
no.
Patrick
I think
Baldwin
people,
Jr. is not that good.
no, I think he was a pretty good player for them, like legitimately, but. We can move on to this next deal on the final deal of this podcast because I don't want to hear Rafa Reamy anymore for my takes. So
Patrick Baldwin averaged 4 points on 40% shooting.
no,
What?
dude, I'm not saying he's like some savant of basketball. I think it was just as a young player, he was very enjoyable to watch in the Warriors, and he had some good moments. Like,
Okay, all
I think
right.
people don't know about it, but I think he could be a solid rotational player.
Okay,
But
let's go to the next deal.
moving on, I think this is another interesting deal. See, everything is kind of just revolving around the Wizards because they blew it up. But the Celtics managed to get Kristaps Porzingis and two first-round picks. The Grizzlies got Marcus Smart, and the Wizards got Tyus Jones, Danilo Gallinari, Mike Muscala, and a second-round pick. Now, I think the kind of the biggest news here, or the two bigger pieces, would be Porzingis going to the Celtics and Marcus Smart going to the Grizzlies. But what are your initial thoughts on this trade, and who do you think is the big winner?
If I were to rank the winners in order, I would say the Grizzlies won number one, Celtics two, and then Wizards three. I would say that the Grizzlies get basically who Dillon Brooks thought he was in Marcus Smart. This is a tenacious defender, really a locker room guy, the heart and soul. He was the heart and soul of the Celtics, I would say. And now you're getting him with this young team. He has a lot of like veteran leadership. He can provide to guys like Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr. So I really like this move, bringing in an experienced player who can really lead this team. And for the Celtics, I think bringing in Porzingis is interesting. You know, it's going to give you a little bit more size, add to the shooting. I think that, you know, running him at the four and Rob Williams at the five is going to be, you know, probably the route that they're going to go in. I just think that, look, you're gambling a lot by trading away Marcus Smart, who has been so big for you all these years, to get a guy in Porzingis who his biggest problem is just his availability. He's not never really able to stay on the court for too long. And do I trust him to make a deep playoff run? Probably not. But you do get two first round picks out of it from Memphis, which I think is, you know, obviously great that you're able to do that. And then for the Wizards, I would say that I think they see Tyus Jones as, you know, one of those backup point guards who really could thrive if given more free rein, kind of a, similar to a Jalen Brunson, James Harden kind of situation. I just don't really see Tyus Jones as that kind of guy.
Yeah, I think my kind of confusion with this is the Wizards are trying to go young and they get a guy in Tyus Jones who's 28 years old. He's a good backup point guard. Honestly showed flashes of good potential in the postseason when Ja Morant goes down. He's very consistent, able to get them wins. And obviously, Gallinari's old, and you can't really use him if you're trying to rebuild. Mike Muscala, kind of the same deal. And you don't even get another first round pick out of Porzingis, a guy you gave up a lot for. So I'm just confused because Tyus Jones, like, it's not like you're getting a young player and you're not getting any picks. Like, this is another directionless trade because it provides them nothing that they need. I mean,
Yeah,
you
I'm not
summed
really
up the
sure.
Grizzlies and the Celtics pretty well. But I just think this is honestly, of all these trades, I think this is the worst deal for the Wizards because you literally got nothing. I give this deal a D for the Wizards. I'm giving this deal probably an A for the Grizzlies, and I give this deal like an A minus B plus for the Celtics. Because I do think
Look,
Porzingis can provide a lot of value in shot blocking. And
would you
Rob
give the
Williams, like,
Grizzlies?
I think I give them an A because I think this is kind of just like, yeah,
Yeah.
you're giving up two first round picks, but you're not really concerned about your first round picks over the next few years because this is an organization, a very young team, where you're assuming this core is going to stay together for a long time.
Yeah, I would give this I would give the Grizzlies an A minus just 'cause I think getting Marcus Smart is huge for them, but giving up those two first round picks, it feels a little unnecessary. Give the Celtics a B plus. I think that, getting the two first round picks is a great deal, and like switching up with Porzingis has a lot of room to go very well. And I would give the Wizards probably like a, I'll give them like a C minus or just a C plus, I would say. I think that they got like a good amount of decent NBA players. I mean, we forgot to mention like, or at least I did, like Gallinari and then Mike Muscala in this deal. And look, just filling out your roster with a little bit more depth. It might not help now, but if these guys stay under contract for a few years, like if you keep Tyus Jones around for 3 years and then bring in some more young talent, maybe Bilal Coulibaly, the guy they drafted this year, develops, Corey Kispert comes into his own, like that could be a guy who could really help you just have some depth. But I agree, it doesn't really add anything immediately or very obviously. So I'm going to give them like a C, actually, a solid
I
C.
feel like Porzingis is the kind of guy you should be receiving two first round picks for, not like being on the other end of the trade.
I agree. I think that, like the amount of draft capital, because think about this. The Wizards traded away their quote unquote big three, Bradley Beal, Kyle Kuzma, and Porzingis. I mean, they didn't draft or they didn't trade Kuzma, but they just let him walk pretty much. I mean, he hasn't signed anywhere yet, but that's most likely what's going to happen. And in total, they've gotten one first round pick back and one promising young player. That's it. That's a complete disaster, in my opinion.
I mean, you get swaps, but again, swaps are definitely a lot more questionable than knowing you have an actual pick. And like a lot of these players that they got just aren't young. They're just like either veteran presences or just good rotational guys on contenders. And why is that what you're looking for if you're trying to totally reset? It's just
Yeah.
kind of very in line with the Wizards organization and kind of just how they've conducted business since the end of the John Wall era.
Yeah, I mean they have new management now, and it seems like they might be steering their ship in a clear direction. But as of right now, just not too sold on the Wizards. And yeah, I mean we'll have to see how they end up doing. But regardless, I think we are going to be talking about them exactly a year from now, as another team in the off season talking about their draft picks and the lottery. So I don't think they're going anywhere next season.
Nope. All
All
right.
right.
Well, I think that's a
But I
good
think
place to
that's a
call
good
it.
place to call it. Hey, wow, look at us.
Yeah.
Insane.
Wow.
But yeah, thank you all so much for listening. Either next week or a couple weeks from now, we are going to be going over a bit of a rebrand. We're going to be adding some new features to the podcast, a lot of exciting stuff there. So just make sure you stay tuned for that. And yeah, we're excited for, Timeout Talk 2.0 pretty much. So thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all then. Take care.
Peace.
Bye bye.